This is Spectator Radio, and you're listening to Table Talk with Olivia Potts and Laura Prendergast. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm joined by Olivia Potts.
This week we are joined by Bryony Gordon. Bryony, it's lovely to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
In the 18 years that she's worked for The Telegraph, Bryony Gordon has become one of the paper's best-loved writers. She is the author of the best-selling The Wrong Knickers, plus the Sunday Times number one bestseller Mad Girl, which was nominated for a British Book Award. Her latest book, Eat, Drink, Run, How I Got Fit Without Going Too Mad, was published earlier this year.
Let's start at the beginning. What was your favourite childhood food?
God, I think it was McDonald's. Do you remember it was something that we weren't allowed? I mean, well, it was also quite, I feel like it was quite a new thing. I sound like I was brought up in the dark ages. It was really interesting. Food doesn't really kind of define my younger life in the way it does for some people, on account of the fact that my mum, I guess I'm 38, and I guess my mum's generation were the first generation who really kind of, they seemed, well, she equated cooking with like being, with oppression really, terrible oppression, but do you know what I mean? Of like the patriarchy being tied to a stove and
a woman's place in the kitchen.
Yeah, and she was like, no, you've got to go out and work for a living, don't cook. So food was very kind of like, it was sort of incidental almost. And she did cook, she cooked like a Lancashire hot pot, which was really good. And then the odd roast. But that was literally, those are my only childhood memories. And so food, and I feel a bit sad about that because I am terrible with food. And I always, or even as a child, it's weird, my memories of food are quite shameful.
That's really sad.
So like I used to kind of secretly binge, like I used to eat like an entire packet of Herta Frankfurters raw. Isn't that weird? That's just literally come to me. I would sneak off and do it quietly. Do you know what I mean? Like, we didn't...
Was it an act of rebellion in a way, or was it?
I don't know what it was. I think it was like... I mean, I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, so I think it was probably, like, my first drug food. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so because it was seen as a bit like, I don't know, maybe because it was seen as not, you know, something that we weren't supposed to pay much attention to. I mean, we were fed, obviously. I mean, I think, look back and I think, oh, we had an aga. So I literally didn't even know how to cook anything. It's funny. I used to sort of then just eat sort of 12 bags of crisps quietly in my room. So my memories of food as a child are not that healthy, really. And, you know, my parents used to always say, oh, we all have to, you know, they were very hot on like the family that eat together, stay together. And they got divorced when I was 21.
So it worked up to a point.
Yeah, I remember they always were very kind of cute. But I remember sort of, I guess I remember the things that we all remember from our childhood, like bird's eye potato waffles, the waffly versatile. It's funny, looking back at my childhood, I worry quite a lot about what my five-year-old eats. And then I think back about the stuff I used to eat as a five-year-old. And I think, there's not a problem there at all. Last night she had a kind of like hummus, pita bread, beetroots and cucumbers, like a tapas dinner.
You should be worried.
And you know, like I remember when she was like 10 months old, she had scallops. Like what the hell, you know? Like kids are really, really well catered for, literally. Where, you know, like I feel guilty when she has like baked beans, sausages and, you know, and potato waffles, whereas that's all I ever had.
Yeah, that's what I'm sure. Do you think that's pressure from other parents? Sort of if everyone's eating scallops or you don't want to feed your kids baked beans.
Yeah, I remember I had a friend who was trying to create healthy baked beans. I'm like, oh, I thought baked beans were good for you. I'm so useless. I mean, I'm not a great cook, but I do think that I'm more obsessed about the food my daughter eats than the food I eat. And I'm not sure that's entirely healthy.
I think that's quite natural, though, when it's a little person.
Yeah. But yeah, they eat incredible things, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, just sort of avocado and stuff. She'll just have half an avocado. And I'm like, what the fuck?
When my nephew's friends come round to play after school, his mum has frozen edamame beans in the freezer, and she said, I'm so ashamed of it, but they're really very good for the children. And they really seem to like them. And I thought, I didn't think I tried an edamame bean until I was 23.
I know, I didn't try an olive. My daughter loves olives. I didn't try an olive till I was like 25 and then it was in a drink. Do you know what I mean? I can't believe some of the things they have. You know, oh, mum, I'd like a baked sweet potato. I'm like, oh, la-di-da. You know, some kind of some falafel, mum. I'm like, what the hell? Is she like vegan? I don't know. You know, like, and I, the stuff that they give them at school, you know, my daughter goes to a state school, but it's all, I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Well, I was going to ask, what was your school food like? Do you mean?
Oh my God, it was disgusting. It was like, I felt like I was in like a Roald Dahl, you know, like slot. Oh my God, it was. I remember the black dining room. We had a black dining room and a white dining room. That's where we ate. It was horrible. It was really, really horrible. Food to me was just kind of like, it was, I guess, I had the most unhealthy kind of relationship with food. I either hated it or wanted to eat it all quietly and, you know, in private. Yeah, it was sort of like really awful kind of custody. Everything just a bit sloppy.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, lots of gravy.
Pretty... No sweet potatoes and falafel.
Oh my God, no. Like that was absolutely not the thing. No, it was like basically meat and two veg, yeah. You know. And, you know, broccoli was kind of exotic.
But overcooked.
Overcooked, yeah. Broccoli, and now, you know, broccoli is like the basic. My daughter's just like, oh, okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember my mum having to convince me to eat it because it was like little trees. And like, they just, my daughter will literally just eat a raw head of broccoli. I'm like, I don't understand, you know. And they just sit there in like, when we go on play dates, they'll just sit there just eating blueberries and pomegranate seeds. And
I'm so like, cosmopolitan.
I know. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel so sort of jealous and sad for five-year-old me. You know, I can't remember when I first had a pomegranate.
When I last had a pomegranate.
No, maybe we should get some pomegranates. So there's a huge, you know, food is kind of, that kind of food culture has just changed so much since I was a kid in the 80s. And I remember McDonald's and McDonald's opening where we lived. And then I remember a Burger King. And it was like exciting to be able to go somewhere where you could eat without a knife and fork.
Mm. I remember when the Burger King first opened your eyes, you had to have an allegiance to one or the other.
Really? Was it like East 17 versus Take That?
It was absolutely like that. And you had to be able to defend it. And it was outrageous that you'd choose one over the other. And I can remember all the arguments, as in why you'd go for each one. And I think that was the treat in my childhood. It wasn't going to somewhere fancy and ritzy like children do now.
Yeah. You know, like, I remember having, like, a birthday party at a Pizza Hut.
Nice.
With a Care Bear.
There was Pizza Express as well, which is a good birthday party one.
Pizza Express didn't exist when I was a child. Or it didn't. But yeah, now it's just... And
what's her favourite?
She loves Byron, because they've got a good colouring.
Is that how you judge a restaurant?
That's how we basically... Do they have colouring? And there's a little restaurant called Arlo's, which is like really lovely, which is like a steak restaurant off the road we live. She likes that. They've got good colouring as well. But the entertainment for kids as well. And just, like, you know, sometimes we go on holiday and we'll go to, like, we went to Centre Parks, and in all of the restaurants, they just have huge soft play areas. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's just blows my mind.
No Ronald McDonald anymore, but then that's probably a good thing.
He was quite creepy, wasn't he? Yeah, but even like the burger, like they don't want, my daughter doesn't want McDonald's. She wants like a gourmet burger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like she could tell, like Byron or Gourmet Burger Kitchen or, you know, Five Guys or, you know, they'd like even the shit food, they've got a massive choice of.
Would she see McDonald's as a treat like we did?
She doesn't even kind of like, she doesn't really know what McDonald's, just doesn't register. She walks past it. I think the only thing that attracts her to McDonald's is like the Happy Meal toys. I mean, that's the same for all of us,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. That's why we still go back.
Yeah. But anyway, so my childhood wasn't like, my relationship with food, it's pretty weird, actually. And yeah, as a child, yeah, I just sort of go and raid the fridge at night.
Are there any things you ate then that provide comfort now, or have you sort of shelved?
I don't eat raw frankfurters anymore, which is a good thing.
I see, is it behind you? Would you eat cooked frankfurters?
No. I look back and think, oh my God. I do love a lamb chop. So like a nice Lancashire hot pot even. But no, I've really had to sort of teach myself food rules, really, and discover food for myself as a grown-up, or as someone pretending to be a grown-up. It's really interesting coming on this podcast because I'm like, why? Oh my God, I've got nothing to say. I'm useless. I don't. But it's one of the areas of my life that I'm really trying to focus on now. Mm. Because also then in my 20s, you know, I had some friends who would go out for dinner. I was never interested in going out for dinner. All I was interested in was like going and getting drunk, mm. you know, going to pubs. Food just kind of got in the way. Yeah. So I'd sort of like I'd eat a sort of sandwich and a packet of Quavers or something before I went out. And then it was all about the drinking. Mm-hmm. So like going to a lovely restaurant and having an amazing meal held no interest to me because I was an alcoholic. But I thought I was a party girl then, you know, because that's what everyone else was doing. So I'm really, it's one of the areas of my life that I really, really, now I'm sober. I'll be a year sober in next month. And it's one of the things in the last year that I've really tried to sort of change to change my relationship with food. So it's not either just something that will keep you going so you can line your stomach for booze, or it's something that you kind of lose yourself in the next day when you're hungover and you want to change your feelings. It's something really healthy in the middle.
Something nourishing.
Yeah, something nourishing. And that's kind of one of the places I spend, you know, my head can go to kind of crazy places with the food. When you get sober from alcohol, it is very common, I think, for food to pop up as something, you know, as a kind of an addiction. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I got pregnant, I didn't miss booze at all. I didn't miss it at all. And I thought, oh, well, that's great. I've knocked my party girl ways on the head. And I realised it was because I just swapped it in for food and I would eat vast amounts. I really took the eating for two thing kind of to the next level. So, you know, I was bulimic in my late teens through to my 20s. So I have had historically a really unhealthy relationship with food that I am desperately trying to sort of get a bit. You know, for me, like for some people, some people look at a menu and they go, oh, I'll have the salad, you know, or that, you know, for me, it's really hard. I want to go for the sort of fattiest, most comforting thing, or I don't really want anything there. I want to eat privately by myself so I can get really lost in it.
Yeah.
So it's a real kind of having to reteach myself.
Yeah. It's a recalibration of sort of how you look at it. And is that something that's made eating out harder since you got sober, when you're sort of analysing it more, or is it something you found enjoyment in?
I've really enjoyed it. I enjoy it more. It's one of the ways I can go out and not crave alcohol, because I realised that I would, you know, like I went out for dinner a couple of weeks ago to this lovely new Lebanese restaurant in Mayfair, and I was nervous because being out at night, to me, I kind of still equate with boozing, and my friend was like, are you going to be okay? Because, you know, people will be drinking. But people were drinking like one glass of wine with their meal. Do you know what I mean? That was not how I ever drank. No. So I didn't feel triggered, quote unquote, by that at all. And actually what I really enjoyed was that sense of sitting around with big sharing plates of like lamb and, you know, and lentils and all that jazz and chatting to people. Mm. And I really, really enjoyed that. So it's something I sort of try and it was my birthday a couple of weeks ago and my husband took me to Gifford Circus. And then afterwards there was like this pop-up restaurant where you all sit around and you're basically forced to have conversations with the people sitting next to you who you don't know. Again, it was big sharing plates. And I loved that. I love that sort of sense of food and community and getting to know other people. So I am sort of slowly bit by bit. So it's kind of in a way now becoming my saviour because it's a safe way for me to go out in the evening.
And you've obviously written a lot about relationships, and a big part of your career has been doing that. And do you think food has a big role to play in relationships, or is it, you know, can you kind of sideline it as something separate?
It's never had a big role to play in my relationships with men, I have to say. But I think it's a really important thing to do, and it's quite a bonding thing. And me and my husband are quite like, we are very good at getting a Deliveroo and sitting in front of the television and watching whatever's the latest thing to watch on Netflix, you know, which isn't necessarily the healthy thing. And when we do cook together or do something, it is like a really bonding experience. But it's, yeah, for me, all my relationships, they never took me out for dinner, ever. Like, what is there, like, one type of, there's a kind of a type of girl that you take out for dinner,
and then
there's a and then there's a type of girl that you take to the pub.
Yeah,
I was the girl that got taken to the pub. Yeah, I'm like, when is someone going
to
take me for dinner? When am I going to be special enough for dinner?
Dinner can seem to be a bit more awkward, I think, if you're, you know, if you're,
it's a protracted period of time that you're sort of, you have to spend with that person and no one else around you.
And you're shuffling the menu.
And you can't even go up to the bar for a break or anything like that. Like, it's all just you. And it's a really intimate thing.
And it can be quite awkward, you know, people get nervous about ordering the wrong thing. Or I can see why.
You know, spinach in your tea, garlic. That's the other thing. I have, like, no, I'm very, very socially awkward about eating because I will not avoid eating the spinachy thing or the garlicky thing or the oniony thing, right? I love all that shit, right? I only just eat a garlic bulb raw, and so I always just feel like, oh god, I'm doing it all wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that there came a point when I was a bit younger where they were like, actually it's a good thing when women eat, you know, when they show lots of interest in food on dates and that kind of thing. And I just took that too much to heart. I would quite happily have gone, if I'd been wined and dined, I would have just gone for the most fabulous thing on any menu. But no one did wine and dine me, so it's never,
yeah, I feel
never
like,
any a problem.
I feel like, you know, when you're, like, I used to read in magazines when people still, no, people do still read magazines, sorry, I apologise. When that, you know, people don't, you know, there was like all those awful magazines you used to read where it'd be like, how to impress on a first date. It's like, men like women who eat.
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm like, well, good. I mean, I do like to eat, you know, but I can't ever, I find it very difficult to rein myself in. So, like, if I'm given the option, I'm like, I'll have everything, please. Everything. Please can I have everything? And I always overorder. So when I do go out for dinner, I'm like, I'll have, they're like, are you sure? Are you just ordering for the two of you? And I love eating lots of food, but just in the way that I loved drinking lots of booze and I loved taking lots of cocaine. Do you know what I mean? And so I know it's not necessarily the best thing for me. And then what I have to do the next day is go, oh shit, I've got to go and do a massive run now. And then I find myself getting up, running it off over 10 miles. I'm like, is this a normal way to live? I don't know. You know, I get a lot of messages from people who, because I do marathons and stuff like that, you know, I've done one in my underwear to prove that, you know, runners' bodies come in different shapes and sizes. I'm a sort of 16 to 18, a size 16 to 18. And I get a lot of messages from people going, you can't outrun a bad diet. And I'm like, well, you can, actually. I'm proof that you can.
And do those messages, I mean, is it men and women sending those messages, or do you get?
Yeah, I got, actually, I got a message on Twitter last night from someone saying that if I lost weight and ate real food, as opposed to, I don't know what, she thought I was eating Pop-Tarts, or that my mental health would be sorted out.
I saw that, I was so angry.
But the thing is I do think, and this is all part of me kind of recovery, I do think that eating well, not drinking shitloads and looking after yourself is part of keeping a good mental health. Mm-hmm. But like, it's not, you know, often it's not the reason, you know, I was ill long before I ever kind of discovered binge pattern eating. But yeah, I do get quite a lot of, I get a lot of remarks about my weight. And I don't think I'm like that big. Do you know what I mean? No, I'm 16 to 18. I weigh about 15 stone, which sounds huge, but I've got massive boobs.
But and you are demonstrably really fit. Like, I don't want to state the obvious. Like, you run marathons.
I'm cycling Ride London next week. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. The thing that gets me through these things is the thought of the food at the end of it. Yeah, it's interesting how people kind of can't stand, you know, they feel really uncomfortable with larger body types on display. Mm-hmm. And I think they mean well, but they can't, you know, they can't quite fathom that you could be a bit larger and still kind of be healthy.
Yeah. And I mean, do you think that's got worse? Because you've obviously now been writing for 18 years, however long it is. And I mean, do you think that's got worse, that people are sort of more prepared to comment on people's bodies in kind of the age of social media?
Well, I think they're more able to, certainly, than when I started, because social media didn't exist. But I also think the great thing about social media is that it allows you to see a variety of different body types, mm-hmm. that you don't necessarily see in the mainstream media. So, you know, it allows me to kind of take my clothes off and people can see, you know, people can see me, and I don't look like a model. I'm actually modeling some lingerie. I'm doing a lingerie shoot this week.
Oh. That's amazing. How are you feeling about
I'm
it?
I'm so excited. I'm going to, you know, like, you know when you see how Victoria's Secret models get ready for their catwalk, they like eat a lettuce leaf and they eat it. I'm like, I'm going to eat everything.
Oh, yeah, the whole point. Please do a video of that. Like the whole week beforehand.
The whole point is to be, yeah, my like lingerie diet.
Brownie's secret diary.
The whole point is to kind of like look a bit curvier. I'm like, when I was doing the second marathon in my underwear, like people go, you know, they have like training plans and they start to eat very healthily. I was like, it's actually my public duty to out.
It would be irresponsible.
Yeah, you can't lose weight.
And what about dinner parties? Do you ever host them?
No.
Do you ever cook
them? Oh my God, I feel like I'm the worst guest on this podcast. No, I've never, I try sometimes. Okay, when I was in my teens, my 20s even, I was like, oh, the kind of grown up thing I should be doing is having a dinner party. But whenever I tried to throw a dinner party, it would all go tits up and everyone would just end up drinking shit loads and their food would never get cooked properly. And I think as an alcoholic, they were sort of my idea of hell, having to sit down in one place and with eyes on you and not being able to just sort of like drink and smoke. So yeah, dinner parties, I don't get invited to dinner parties. Again, I'm not the kind of person that gets invited to dinner parties. Come around for dinner. No one asks me. Ask me for dinner.
Someone invite Bryony for dinner, please.
Yeah, people just, I'm trying to think the last time we were invited for dinner. Oh my God, no one likes us.
I think dinner parties have gone a bit out of fashion, really. My friends seem to either do pop-up parties where they charge you to have dinner with them, or people go out to a restaurant, but I don't
think... We can't go out, yeah. But also, I feel like my table is not big enough to have a dinner party.
I just think it's a really big commitment. Hosting a dinner party, I think you're sort of looking at hours of work, and it might just be because I do it partly as a job that I think, oh God, no, not in my spare time. But it's cleaning the house.
I do remember my parents having lots of dinner parties, but I don't know what they ate. I mean, I'm very much like, should we just deliver in some pizzas and just sit around and have a laugh? But also now, you know, London certainly feels a lot more like New York in that sense that, you know, when I look out on the road, the only things I see are Ubers and Deliveroo drivers, and sort of eating takeout has become sort of the norm. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So, and then eating out. I mean, there are so many amazing restaurants. Like, why would I invite people to my house? would sit on my tiny kitchen table. Yeah, I feel like And maybe I should have a dinner party. It's so funny, I saw someone on Twitter earlier asking, guys, could you tell me really what you really eat instead of like creating some magazine version of what you eat? And I feel like that's what I'm doing now.
Well, I mean, you've obviously interviewed a lot of people as well. I mean, do you sense when people say, oh, you know, I eat everything? You know, at the start of interview, people always say that kind of stuff. I mean, do you think that's true, or do you think people are often...
I mean,
telling
oh yeah, you do hear a lot of, you know, thin people say, oh, I eat everything.
I eat like a horse.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
It's funny, isn't it? It's always interesting interviewing someone over lunch. I remember interviewing Aidan Turner, Poldark, and every time I've interviewed him, that has involved a lot of alcohol. Yeah. But when I read models talking about, you know, I eat everything, I'm like, no, you don't. You eat everything given to you on the plate, but you've only been given like an asparagus tip. Yeah, I do think, yeah, it feels quite kind of, I find it quite difficult talking about my relationship with food. I don't know why.
I wonder if there's a sense, and it goes back to the models who say, oh, I eat it like a horse, I eat everything, that there is this sort of nonchalance that we affect around food. We eat everything, it's a really easy relationship, there's nothing difficult there, I'm an easygoing, happy-go-lucky kind of person. Mm. And also, I just miraculously stay really thin.
Yeah.
And I think it's harder to maintain that in a social media world. And that's why we see influencers sort of stepping down and saying, well, actually, what I've been saying for however long is nonsense. It's not easy. I was really miserable. I have this troubled relationship. Mm. But it's only just starting to happen.
I think a lot of people do have very troubled relationships with food. And I don't think enough people talk about that, you know.
It's still quite taboo.
It is. Because, especially, I think, because, you know, we're lucky to have food. Mm. Do you know what I mean? There are people, you know, around the world that don't. And so to be whinging about, oh, I feel like I've got this kind of, you know, binge pattern addiction thing. It's like, oh, shut up. But, you know, I know a lot of people that don't like eating out because they don't like people seeing them eat.
Yeah.
And that's quite a normal thing I hear quite a lot. And there's that sense of, am I eating the right thing? You know, have I ordered? I went out for lunch with someone quite well known recently, and I was really aware of what I was, you know, I was like, I ordered something I totally would not have ordered if I was not with her. If that makes sense. Like I ordered something like tiny, and then I felt like starving about half an hour later, and I was thinking, was she then ordered? Do you know what I mean? It's that thing of like, what you order says, I feel, says so much about you. Do
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Performative eating.
Yeah, and it's like quite exhausting. And I feel like if I don't order the fish, then I look kind of, I don't know why that has some sort of bearing on my intellect. Do you know what I mean? I'm very, you know, I...
Fish is brain food. Oily fish,
yes,
brain food.
But also like I'm not exotic enough. Do you know what I mean? And then the other day, for the first time, I went somewhere and we had whole globe artichokes. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I was sitting there like...
It's quite confusing.
Yeah. And I sort of had to whisper to someone and go, sorry, well, how do I eat? And they were like, I don't know. I don't know either.
Turns out it's in the least decorous way possible. Just suck it out.
Suck on the leaf.
Yeah. But so there's that sense of sort of stupidity as well and shame. Yeah, I find it's one of the things. And because the other really interesting thing about food, right, is that I found as an addict, you know, giving up alcohol, like you don't have to drink alcohol to live. You don't have to take drugs to live, but you do have to eat food to live, right? So whereas a lot of kind of like programs, recovery programs focus on complete abstinence from alcohol and drugs, you can't do that with food. Every day you have to face up to those choices. And it can be a really exhausting and a very hard thing. And I kind of wake up in the morning and go, right, I'm going to be good. I'm going to make good choices. I'm going to eat three times a day. I'm not going to... And then by the evening, a bit like alcohol, I'm like, I just want to eat everything. A binge. I want to binge. I binge now without the purging.
Well, I think there's a real... It's not that it's easier to give something up completely, as you say, but I think if you have, and I certainly have a compulsive personality, I go all or nothing. And it's why diets have never worked for me, because I do them literally nothing for as long as I can, and then I'm right back to all.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's that daily thing of thinking, well, for as long as I'm going to be here, it's facing up to it every single day. And I'm rubbish. I'm really, really bad.
I think also there's some acceptance. Like I kind of think, well, okay, I'm not a great cook. I don't have a great relationship with food, but that's okay. And I do try and eat sort of 60% of the time. Well, do you know what I mean? I try and get my five a day in. I try and avoid the crap. I always eat the fat on a steak.
So
is that disgusting?
So delicious.
No,
and
all the
I eat like my husband's as well. Yeah, he leaves it. I don't understand people that just leave, or people that leave like roast chicken skin.
I was just gonna say roast chicken skin.
What's wrong with them?
They shouldn't be allowed roast chicken.
So I tell you what, basically, my rule is, I know that you're supposed to eat really, I know I do the reverse of what you're supposed to do, which is I don't eat that much for breakfast because I can't really face it. Lunch, I'm sort of indifferent to. Then dinner, I eat everything.
That's quite a good way to do it.
I'm like, okay.
My time has come.
Yeah, it's like a reverse pyramid. I'm not doing it the right way. I know that. I hope that I'm being honest, and that I hope that this is, you're not like, we shouldn't have invited her on as a guest. Because I think it's that really, there's a lot of people my age who, you know, what's really interesting for me sitting in an office, when I go into the Telegraph, I've got a lot of very young people around me. Sort of, a girl I sit next to has just set up like a monthly supper club. And to her, you know, her Instagram is just full of these amazing things she's just knocked up. And I find that, I'm like, it's almost like she's speaking another language. Do you know what I mean? Like, we were talking about baking earlier, and I was saying that I would probably find it easier to get into rocket science than baking. Like, I don't watch the Great British Bake Off because I don't really understand what's going on. And when people like talk about, you know, I went to a friend's house the other day and she just knocked up this kind of apricot cake thing that didn't have any refined sugar or any flour in it, but she'd literally just done it in like what seemed like 10 minutes, and she was like, it's really great, do you want the recipe? And I was like, I feel like it's such a crucial part of being an adult, cooking. And like I missed that day at school. Do you know what I mean? And so I feel like I really need to take myself off and have some like classes. I can do stuff that like I can knock together. Like I did cook something last week, which was like lentils, beetroot, bit of chicken, some spring onion. You know, sounds no, were there spring onions? Some I don't know. It was, and my friends were like, "It's delicious, Bryony," and they were really like, we were away in Cornwall, and they were like, they just kept on saying, "This is great, Bryony." Compliments to the chef, and I'm like, "You're really overdoing this now," because they couldn't believe that I was cooking, yeah. And I think they felt that they had to encourage me like a 5-year-old child, you know, writing their name for the first time. Wow, you've done really well, Bryony. And I'm good at knocking together stuff that's kind of messy and just chucking in stuff. That I'm good at. But if like doing a, you know, trying to do baking and following a recipe to the letter, I'm just hopeless at. I don't know what any of the measurements mean.
But you don't need to be, I don't think. I think you can buy, unless it's something you decide to take on as a project.
But you know how some people, like adults, they have, like grown-ups, they have like a baking section in their cupboard. You know all those things that I feel like, oh, I'm just like, I don't. I mean, I do, I think I've got some like hundreds and thousands, but that's just for sort of pouring down my throat at times of sadness. Also, the thing is, we've got this house that's sort of slightly falling apart that we moved into 2 years ago and haven't, it costs so much that we haven't really been able to do as houses in London do. I mean, I'm making it sound like it's tiny. It's like, it's a tiny house. We moved in and then couldn't, and I remember looking around it and the estate agent being like, of course you'll just knock it all down and start again. And we were like, can't afford to do that. We've still not done it. So our kitchen is like, I can't even begin to tell you, it's hilariously crap. And we have a fridge that's literally like a mini bar fridge. So that I think is really kind of restricts my desire to kind of, like I go around to people's houses and they've got like islands and they open their huge fridge. They're like, what should we knock up? Oh, let's just blah, 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 blah. And then they've knocked up this dinner and I'm like, oh, I wish I was, when I grow up, I really want to be able to cook like that.
Let's talk about your new book, because the headline, well, the title is Eat, Drink, Run.
Yeah.
So what's the eating aspect and what's the drink aspect?
Well, so for me, it's a book about like a fat bird, basically couldn't run for a bus, ending up running a marathon and then convincing Prince Harry to talk about his mental health. So it's kind of a running book, not about running, that's kind of about doing the thing you think you can't. We called it Eat, Drink, Run because it was, I thought that to be a marathon runner, I would have to like only eat kale and, do you know what I mean? And it was, and you know, and cut out alcohol and, you know, live a very healthy life. And I didn't. I carried on eating as I did, huge amounts of burgers. And I carried on drinking, even though I'm now sober. So it was a sort of like, the, you know, the subtitle being How I Got Fit Without Going Too Mad. It was basically saying that you can, you know, I think the thing that puts a lot of people off fitness is the idea that they don't look that way. They're not making smoothies in the morning with their Nutribullets. They're not, do you know what I mean? They're not faffing around with quinoa. And it was sort of saying, you can still do this. You don't have to, just because you don't look like the sort of idealistic, or the portrayals in the mainstream media. I think that because of the sort of clean eating phenomenon, which obviously is falling apart a bit now, I think there was always that presumption that if you wanted to go out and do exercise, you'd also have to be eating quinoa and knocking things up with your Nutribullet. And, you know, I was sort of trying to, the message I'm trying to say is that anyone can do this, do you know what I mean? And it's a start to a healthier life. And when I do exercise, I do make better choices in terms of food, do you know what I mean? Weirdly, once I finish a long run or something, I want to eat something really nice. Mm-hmm. I don't want to eat crap. I don't want to eat crisps. I don't want to eat sweets. So I've been talking a lot about of the binging I do, but, you know, as I've got older, my binging has I binge on nice things that are good for me. So yeah. I'll eat like 5 times the amount of lentils I should eat or something. My husband's like, this is lovely. Can't wait for later. You know, so I'm sort of like, I try to be a bit kind on myself and go, okay, but I like to eat really lovely things, you know. So I don't eat Haribo. I don't eat crisps anymore. I don't tend to eat, do you know what I mean? Like, I try not to go anywhere near McDonald's, or because for me as well, I've really noticed that food gives me a hangover.
Yeah.
Just as much as booze used to, like, I feel crap the next day. You know, if I get a Chinese takeaway, I just feel gross. So definitely for me, it's like, well, if you're gonna eat in a bingey way, at least eat good things, you know.
Yeah. And do you find yourself going for sweet things or mostly savoury? Or what?
I'm definitely a savoury girl. I didn't think I had a sweet tooth until I gave up booze, and then suddenly it was like, I'll have all the Ben and Jerry's, please. And I realised that I did have a sweet tooth, but I was basically taking in all my sugar via booze.
So it was totally satisfied for that time.
Yeah, I didn't need any more. But I don't want sweets or anything like that. I would rather have a savoury. Like when I was running the last marathon, it was quite hot. And about mile 14, I got heat stroke. I don't remember much of like the next 5 miles. But what I do remember is the girl I ran with, this girl Jada Cesar, who's a plus size model, is that she produced a sausage roll. And it really, and it completely revived me. Do you know what I mean? So whereas her thing was flapjacks.
Right.
I would always rather a sausage roll.
Yeah, I think I'm probably with you on that. I mean, I like a flapjack, but if I was running a marathon, there'd need to be someone running alongside me with a sausage, at least one sausage roll.
Yeah, yeah. So I was running towards the sausage roll, which
is interesting. That was the proverbial carrot.
But that was what I was trying to say to people, that you don't have to be a kind of Mo Farah or Paula Radcliffe. Like, we can all do this, you know, you just make little changes as opposed to big ones. And that's what my life is like. I'm sort of battling through to, instead of having the raw frankfurters, to having sort of raw, I don't know, broccoli or whatever. I try and fill myself with stuff that is actually, like, I try and see food as medicine. Mm-hmm. And I realize that if I put good stuff in my body, it will pay off. And if I eat bad stuff, I am going to feel like crap, you know.
So what would your desert island dish be?
I mean, I love scallops.
Yeah, that's a strong choice.
You could catch them off the side of the desert island.
It's good your daughter likes them as well.
Yeah, with like a bit of chorizo, some pea puree.
You could just throw it together.
Just chuck it together, yeah. Just kill the pea.
That massive fridge in the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bryony, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for listening. And do join us again for the next Spec Life food podcast.
Thank you for joining us on the Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to the Spectator website. La pauvre fleur disait au papillon céleste.